नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from text number 26, seventh canto, chapter number 8, chapter entitled Lord Slays the King of the Demons. Satasya hastot kalitastadasuro Vikridato yadvadahir gurutmataha Asadvamanyantartokasomara Ganachada Bharata Sarvadishnyapa Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Yudhishthir, O great son of Bharat, when Lord Narsingadev gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, the demigods who had lost their abodes and who were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were perturbed. Puppet. When Hiranyakashipu was in the process of being killed by Lord Narsingadev, the Lord gave the demon a chance to slip from his clutches. This incident was not very much appreciated by the demigods, for they were greatly afraid of Hiranyakashipu. They knew that if somehow or the other Hiranyakashipu escaped from Narsingadev's hands and saw that the demigods were looking forward to his death with great pleasure, he would take great revenge upon them. Therefore, they were very much afraid. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Narsingadev with his club and began to beat him. Lord Narsimhadev, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. So, seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here, we'll just read the translation of verse number 25 and 26 once again. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Narsimhadev with his club and began to beat him. Lord Narsimhadev, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. O Yudhishthir, O great son of Bharata, when Lord Narsingadev gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, the demigod who had lost their abodes and who were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were very perturbed. So we can see that the demigods also exhibit qualities which are very similar to human beings. In this particular case, we see how they are so much fearful of Narsimhadev. So much fearful of Hiranyakashipu. And this, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning that actually the demigods, because Narsingadev was playing with Hiranyakashipu, just like how Garuda plays with a snake, and they were seeing that Hiranyakashipu was getting out of the clutches of Narsingadev. And what was more scary to them, what they were feeling more afraid of, was in case Hiranyakashipu were to see the demigods from the heavens looking at Hiranyakashipu, and finally if Hiranyakashipu was to win, then naturally he would take revenge upon all the demigods, because they are all looking at the whole scene with great amount of happiness. So the natural tendency with all of us, that particularly when we see somebody who is whom we hate getting a beating, there is naturally a tendency with us to feel very happy. And I remember when I was in college, there was one student, I mean, one couldn't call him a student actually, but he was there registered in the college. But he was like a mini Hiranyakashipu, very tall, well-built, black in complexion. And his only goal in life was to harass people, somehow or the other bully them. Somehow he must have come from a very bad childhood. Whoever he would meet, he would either twist their arms, or he would catch their ear, or he would pull their hair. Something or other he would do in order to make, and everybody would be so much scared of him. Nobody would dare to even open their mouths. Even five or six people getting together, if they thought of beating him up, they would all, I mean, they were all so scared. And one day, I remember, somehow this person got into trouble with a group of gundas. And right in the college, these gundas came one day and started beating him up. And all of us were hiding behind a shop, looking at the scene. And we were feeling so much happiness. Oh, finally this man is getting what is due to him. But none of us had the guts to come in front and stand over there. Watch the spectacle right in front. Because who knows, in case this person doesn't get fully beaten up, you know, and he sees us, you know, enjoying, what would he do to us? So the natural quality that comes within us of seeing somebody else whom we hate particularly being put into trouble. So this fear is a very strong emotion. In fact, in the basic, four basic qualities that a person, a human being exhibits of eating, sleeping, mating and defending, each of this is performed with an element of fear. In order to satisfy this longing for eating, a human being has to perform so many activities. He has to work so hard just in order to maintain himself and just to ensure that the next food comes on his table in time. He has to work so hard. Anand Vrindavan Prabhu was telling me that the people today, particularly in Bombay, they are so much up to their neck in debt. Taken loans for so many different things. Housing, car, education, personal expenses, foreign travel. You know, everybody is right up to their neck, maximum, all loans they have exhausted, and they are just paying their EMIs, equated monthly installments. That if a person does not go to work for one day, then he's in so much anxiety that, you know, if I lose my salary for that one day, then how will I be able to meet my loans? So he was explaining that even if there is a train, if there's a bomb blast in the train, be sure that the next day all the trains will be filled. Even if 50, 100 people were to die in a train, in a bomb explosion in a train, for sure, and we have been seeing it, that we have had in the last few years several such instances. And Bombay goes on. Life goes on in Bombay. This, absolutely, there is no stoppage. Because people are in so much anxiety, so much fear, that if I don't work, I'm not able to get a salary in order to repay my loans. What to talk about having sufficient money to eat? And similarly, sleeping, everybody is aspiring for one extra bedroom in their house. There was this very beautiful but very true story of a person on the internet a few years back, I remember, how it was that a family of very average middle class, from a very average middle class background, somehow or the other, their son got an opportunity to go to America. to pursue his further studies. So he went to America and then he did his MS over there and he got a job. And then he started sending some money home. Background was so simple that they were staying in a one-bedroom hall kitchen, and somehow the father always had an aspiration that somehow or the other I should get a house with at least two bedrooms. So he would keep writing to his son that somehow or the other don't spend any money, and this boy, you know, would eat in a very frugal restaurant or sometimes mostly cook at home, and he would ensure that he calls from very cheap calling cards. In fact, do everything in order to save money. And then finally a time came for him. After a few years, family decided, father and mother, that now we should get him married. So they started looking around for a girl for him from the village. And then the boy came, got married and went back. And life just started going like that. And then one fine day, the father died. The son came back to see the father and performed his funeral rites. Eventually, mother also died. They had children. The children was growing up in the West. The children had no inclination to come back to India. They didn't identify themselves as Indians at all. Although the son, he still had very deep affection and roots with India. And somehow or the other, he was thinking that one day, sooner or later, I had to come back to India. But his children, they had become almost Americans. What is that called? ABCD. American born, confused they see. ABCD. So, the children didn't have an inclination. And the son and his wife, they were both working. So eventually when they were about 60 years of age, they decided to come back to India. And with all the savings that they had, all they could get was a flat with one extra bedroom. Yeah? So the thing is that so much of effort, so much of anxiety, just for that one extra bedroom in their house, so that they can sleep a little bit more comfortably. And what to talk about mating. When children come, so much of anxiety about the children. Are the children going to be studying well? Are they going to be in good association? If he's a little bit late in coming back home, why is he so late? So much of anxiety. And finally, the parents, their only goal is somehow or the other provide sufficient amount of money so that even the children can be happy after they die. But then invariably what happens is that the children fight over each other for the wealth of the parents. The parents have struggled to earn a livelihood, to increase the bank balance. And after they depart, whatever they leave behind for the children are only fighting with each other. We are seeing in one of the most so-called influential families that is there in India, so much of wealth, but so much of anxiety. So this is a predominating feature in our life. Right from the time we are born till the time we die, we are always in anxiety. So much of fear. Unless, of course, you are a brahmachari in Radha Gopinath temple. Everything. But Radha Gopinath's mercy is so wonderfully taken care of. Who would ever want to leave such a atmosphere where everything is taken care of? So why is this particular emotion so strong in us? It's because ultimately all of us know that we are going to die. Death is certain. And with death comes a grand finale to all our plans. Everything that we ever aspire for, everything, all the hopes that we have in life is finally going to be coming to an end with death. I want to talk about death old age. How much fearful we are of old age. And just in order to ensure that we are somehow or the other not allowing old age to catch up with us, the cosmetic industry is making millions and billions of dollars just promoting this particular one aspect, that don't become old. At least become old, but don't show that you're old. So a 30-year-old person wants to look like a 20-year-old. A 40-year-old person wants to look like a 30-year-old. A 50-year-old wants to look like a 40-year-old. But the most pathetic thing is when a 70-year-old wants to look like a 20-year-old. And particularly if you go along Marine Drive in the evenings for a walk, you'll see so many women, also sometimes men, who are in their 60s and 70s and they are wearing t-shirts and jeans and trying to look as if they are 20 years old. But just by looking at their faces, you know that they're almost on the verge of death. Somehow or the other, keeping body and soul together. And even when they are walking, you can see that their bones are creaking. The way they are walking, they are holding on. But still, they would want to wear those tight jeans and t-shirts. And somehow or the other, they want to look as if they are young. So much of illusion. So much of anxiety. Just because they want to project that they are looking young. And ultimately, we all understand that this particular most important factor in our life, which is death, is going to overtake us sooner or later. And at that time, particularly when we see that a person is about to die or a person has already died, then we look at that body and say, my God, how is it that we get attached to something which is so obnoxious? Ultimately, a piece of matter which has 9 holes in it. And out of those 9 holes, 7 holes are in your face. Somehow, we realize that always Krishna has the last laugh. Each and every one of those holes that our body has is exuding obnoxious substances. Right? Every one of those holes. The substances which nobody would want to be ever in contact with. But they are part and parcel of our daily life. We keep cleaning them. And the thing that we are most attached to, the face, you know, which we want to make into the most beautiful object of our body, has 7 holes. From where there are so much of dirt that is coming out every day, which requires to be clean. So nearly 80% of the obnoxious substances that come out from your body are coming out from your face. And yet we are so much attached to that face, trying to make it look so nice and young and always presentable, and so much of makeup. Maximum makeup goes out into the face. The whole cosmetic industry, in fact, the hair and the face, if you go to a shop, you go to a cosmetic shop, you'll find that most of the ingredients or most of the things that are available off the shelf are to take care of your hair and to take care of your face. And I remember once a sannyasi was giving a class and he was explaining what really happens to a body after it is dead. After the soul leaves the body and it is taken to the cremation ground, what happens to the body? And he was actually meditating for several months in a cremation ghat, just to see what happens to the body after the soul leaves it. And he was describing so vividly, the body is brought onto the cremation ghat by all the relatives. Some of the relatives are crying. Some are in a very sober mood. They place the body on the pyre of wood. And then it's lit. And then all the family members who are gathered over there, after some time they depart. And the sannyasi was sitting over there with a few others who also wanted to be experiencing this vairagya. renunciation, because when you see a body that is burning right in front of you, there is a tremendous amount of renunciation that comes into your heart. And he was describing that the first thing to go is the hair. That thing on which we spend so much of money, with shampoos and oils and beautiful, beautiful apparel in order to project the hair, that's the first thing that goes off. It just goes off like putting a flame to cotton. It just goes off. And then after some time, the eyeballs, the eyes are so beautiful. Particularly when we see in Hindi films, most of the songs that a man sings to a woman is concerning his eyes, concerning her eyes, how beautiful the eyes look. And the eyeballs, because of the pressure that is built up on account of the heat, the eyeballs just pop out. And then they fall on the ground. And the eyeball is looking at you. And sometimes, and I've seen this happening myself, because of the pressure, the heat, all of a sudden, the body that is there on the funeral pyre, which is lying down, suddenly sits up. Can you imagine a person who is lying over here, suddenly he's sitting? The body is burning, but then he's sitting because the back bones, they suddenly contract or expand, I don't know exactly what, but then the person suddenly starts sitting up. And sometimes his hands start flapping, legs start flapping. And then you get the smell of burning flesh. So this is reality. And unless and until one of each of us experience what is happening in a burning gut, renunciation really doesn't come into our heart. We have to be always realizing that this is finally what is going to happen to our body. That fear that is there within our heart to take care of this body under all circumstances, somehow or the other to protect it and to protect our near and dear ones. This is what is going to happen to the body finally. And that sannyasi was telling that he was meditating in that particular ghat, Manikarnika ghat, for nearly 6 months. And after I heard that class, I myself started feeling that maybe I also should visit this burning ghats. And I remember whenever I would go to Jagannath Puri, right next to Haridas Thakur Samadhi, you have Swarga Dwar, the place that allows you to go to heaven. From where, you know, Swarga, Dwar to Swarga. And just out in the open, at any point of time, you'll see two or three bodies burning. So this is the condition of the body after the soul leaves it. And we really have to experience it. Then we will get gradual detachment from this body. A devotee is never fearful because he knows eventually that this body is going to go in any case. Let me perfect this life so that finally at the time of death I'm able to remember Krishna. And if I can remember Krishna at the time of my death, that's a perfection of my life. Achari Prabhu is over here. He was just telling me about the wonderful and glorious departure of his mother. Actually, it is his father who they were always worried about because he had a pacemaker in his heart and they were never knowing when something would happen to him. And his mother was hale and hearty. But one day, she suddenly got a massive heart attack. And from the time she got the heart attack till the time she left her body, which was a few hours later, all the time she was chanting Krishna. Just Krishna. And she was from the home, she was going to the hospital, from the hospital to the ICU, ICU she was shifted into another hospital where she eventually left her body. All the time she was just chanting Krishna. And it was not as if she was giving big, big Bhagavatam classes or she was hearing Bhagavatam classes. And it was not as if throughout her life she was a Krishna devotee. She was a devotee, of course, very pious lady. But then they came into contact with ISKCON and then started practicing this process of Krishna consciousness. She got attached to the holy name. So that finally when the time came for her to leave her body and she knew that this is the time that I'm going to depart, she was only chanting Krishna, 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 Krishna. Such a glorious departure, which all of us aspire that someday all of us would have such an opportunity. And if we don't have this opportunity, so what? If at the time of our death we do not remember Krishna, so what? Krishna gives us so much of assurance in the Bhagavad Gita. Neha bikrama nasosti pratyavayo na vidyate. Svalpam apyase dharmasya trayato mahato bayat. There's no problem. We'll be able to remember Krishna from our next birth onwards. Right in the beginning. So nothing is ever lost in Krishna consciousness. Process is so perfect. Everything else in this material world is so temporary. Whatever you own, whatever you possess, whatever your relationship, whatever your position in society, everything you just leave behind at the time of death. But the most wonderful thing is that in Krishna, a person who is in Krishna consciousness, nothing is ever lost. He just carries it on to his next life. And he has one more opportunity to perfect it in his next life. The life after next. So after traversing through millions and billions of lifetimes of enjoying in the 84 lakh species of life, within a few more lifetimes, we will come to a situation where we'll go home back to Godhead. Of course, Srila Prabhupada told us that we should not wait for one extra lifetime. We have the opportunity to go home back to Godhead in this same lifetime. Just follow the process. Just chant the holy names of the Lord. And even though we may not be having so much of taste, finally Krishna sees what is the endeavor that we are putting in. And he reciprocates. So this fear is something that devotees, they may be at times in anxiety, definitely. But they are not fearful. They are prepared, ever willing, ever ready to leave this world so that we can go home back to Godhead. In whatever situation you may be, if you look at the life of Haridas Thakur, who could be in a worse situation than Haridas Thakur? Just so that he stood before the Qazi to tell him that there is nothing more important in this world than chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He could have said that it was that I will listen to whatever you say, but he didn't. He stood before the Qazi to tell him that this is what is the perfection of life, to be always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he was sentenced to be beaten in 22 marketplaces. Unimaginable. 22 marketplaces. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that just 2 or 3 marketplaces is enough to kill a person. And this executioner, they were huge, bulky people. But Haridas Thakur survived. All the 22 marketplaces, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally came and he was taking all the beatings on his back. He was all the time chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Gopinath Patanayaka, he was put on the changa. Now, changa is something that is unimaginable. Nowadays, execution is actually done in such a pleasant way. We have the injection person is put on a chair, he's trapped, and he's given an injection. He becomes unconscious, and after he becomes unconscious, he doesn't know that he has left his body, and within a few minutes, it's over. But Changa is a different ballgame altogether. In a pit, you have this sharp, razor-like lances which are pointed upwards, and a person is put onto the Changa. And Gopinath Patanayaka, for something that he hardly... There was no reason why he should be given such a severe punishment for such a small offense, apparent offense that he did. He just looked at the prince and told him that, you know, my horses don't look up at the sky like you do. That's all that he did. And this prince actually had that habit of keeping on looking up at the sky with all that weird expression on his face. And he was actually trying to cheat Gopinath Patanayaka. So, just for that, and all the devotees went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, my dear Lord, please save him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what connection do I have with whatever he did? I'm a sannyasi. Please don't bother me, otherwise I'll go to Alarnath. All the devotees became so fearful. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after repeated, again and again, people coming to him and begging him, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finally said, okay, you pray to Jagannath and whatever Jagannath wants will finally happen. And then Gopinath Patanayaka was saved. But later on, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the devotees, what was Gopinath Patanayaka doing at the time when he was on the Changa? And the devotees said that Gopinath Patanayaka was chanting the holy names of the Lord continuously. Completely unafraid. So devotees are ready to give up their body for the sake of Krishna, for the sake of protecting other devotees also. Like we know from this wonderful story of Kunti Mataji, who was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and she was in this place which was so terrible. Hundreds and hundreds of people were being killed over there every day. And finally it came to a situation where the temple was attacked by these bandits. And actually, she had an opportunity. The government, the US government, was helping all the people to get out from that place, giving them transport and so on. And they were telling all the devotees, please get out. Your lives are in danger. But the devotees just preferred to stay back. And when the army came over there and they started raising their guns in order to shoot at the devotees, this Mataji, who was actually a very frail lady, she went in front of the executioners, in front of this army, and told them that, If you have to kill anybody, you first kill me. And these people were so merciless. They had absolutely no compassion. They just shot. And she fell down dead. What a sacrifice. She was completely convinced that if I have to give up my life, I'll do it in the service of the devotees. So devotees, whatever situation they may be put in, they are always equipoised. But there's one thing that actually devotees are very, very fearful of. And that is committing offenses to other devotees. Going away from the association of devotees. Now, going away from the association of devotees also means that a person is in the association of devotees and yet not in the association of devotees. Right? You can be in the association of devotees. You are coming to the temple, you are mingling with the devotees, you are there, part and parcel of the whole team. From an external point of view, it appears as if, yes, you are very much part of the devotees. But because you are not having any relationship with the devotees, there's no association. So association means having deep, loving relationship with devotees. So this is what devotees are always afraid of. That some time should not come that I am removed out of the association of devotees. A time comes when I do not have a relationship with devotees. This is something so scary. Just imagine if each of us, any of us, were to come to the temple and there's nobody to greet us. You're coming to the temple, you're going to take darshan of the deities. Of course, in the Kanishta stage, for us, we only look at the deities. We don't even want to have a relationship with the devotees. But just assuming that you're coming to the temple for several years, and you come into the temple and nobody looks at you, nobody comes to greet you, nobody wants to talk to you. You know all the devotees, but yet they act as if they don't know you. Right? It's so fearful to be in such a situation. I personally would hate to be in such a situation. There's no meaning to life. Because every devotee is looking forward to having a relationship. He wants to be loved. He wants people to shower affection on him. Right? He wants people to care about him. Inquire, how are you? How are you feeling today? This is a natural feeling that every human being has. The need to feel loved and cared. And if that is not there, even though you might be coming to the temple every day and spending 24 hours in the temple, if that is not there, then you are so miserable. You are there, but you are not there. So this is what a devotee is most fearful about. A devotee is also fearful that he loses the taste for hearing and chanting. Because this is the backbone of our Krishna consciousness. If we do not do that particular aspect of our Krishna consciousness properly, Shravanam and Kirtanam, right, then we are in a very, very dangerous situation. As Srila Prabhupada would say, any person who does not chant his 16 rounds attentively, he has to consider himself to be in a very dangerous situation. Maya can attack him at any time. And the two main reasons why you lose taste in chanting the holy names, offenses to devotees and neglect of your spiritual life. Vaishnava Aparad. Vaishnava Aparad is so serious. As I was listening to a class where the sannyasi was saying that if, just imagine a situation where there is a cobra in front of you. A king cobra. Cobras are very rare, but a king cobra is even more rare. And the poison of a king cobra is very, 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 very powerful. If you're not treated, in less than an hour you're dead. So just imagine that we are in front of this king cobra and this king cobra is ready to strike us. What would be our reaction at that particular point of time? We would run. We would just run. Run away from that cobra. Similarly, the sannyasi was explaining that when you are hearing Vaishnava Aparad, you just have to run. At the most, the king cobra, what can he do? He can bite you. You don't have anybody to treat you and you're dead. But a Vaishnava who is blaspheming other Vaishnavas, he will actually murder your spiritual life. For several lifetimes, not just that particular lifetime. For several lifetimes, hundreds of lifetimes maybe. So that is the power of Vaishnava Prad. A very, very striking analogy. Much more powerful than a king cobra biting you. So we have to be very, very careful to somehow or the other guard against this. Because that is the backbone of our spiritual life. So we have to be genuinely fearful. And such fear is protected by Krishna. If you are genuinely fearful of this, of committing Vaishnava Prad, of not taking care of our spiritual life, of not associating with devotees nicely, of not focusing on our Shravanam and Kirtanam, if you are genuinely fearful, then Krishna reciprocates. He ensures that at all times we are fearful about this. Ye yata mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamiham. Mama vartamanu vartante manushya partha sarvasa. When Lord Krishna says this, it's not just that he is saying this with regard to reciprocation of our Krishna consciousness, of our efforts in Krishna consciousness, but is also going to reciprocate with regard to our genuine fear for losing the taste for Krishna consciousness. We spend so much of time, we spend our whole life practically trying to cultivate this desire to please Krishna. So much of effort we are putting into it. Just like a person who, if he earns $100 billion, he would be so much fearful of losing it. Similarly, we, every day that we are spending in Krishna consciousness, we are accumulating so much of wealth. Indescribable amount of wealth we are accumulating. Right? Which is trillions and quadrillions. Every day we are actually accumulating trillions and quadrillions of dollars worth of Krishna consciousness. Right? Every day. Unbelievable amount of Krishna consciousness we are accumulating. Yeah. Want to talk about every day, every hour, every minute. Every minute that we are engrossed in Krishna consciousness is so valuable. It cannot be equated in terms of anything in this world because this is completely transcendental. This is beyond the conception of what we can calculate in this material world. Our ability to calculate is so limited. So that is the value of Krishna consciousness that we can accumulate in 1 minute. I want to talk about a whole lifetime that we do in this endeavor, how valuable it is. But if towards the end of our life, if you are not able to take advantage and we are neglectful, what a loss. One more birth. Of course, in one sense there is no loss because we will get it carried forward into our next birth. But the opportunity for us to perfect our Krishna consciousness in this lifetime will not be there. So that is what we have to be genuinely fearful of. So the demigods are teaching us, Prabhupada is teaching us through this purport, that yes, we also have to be fearful, but we have to understand what we have to be fearful about. Because Hiranyakashipu's, like when I was in college, that the person who was there, like a mini, there would always be Hiranyakashipus in our life. In some, every stage of our life, there will be a Hiranyakashipu, right? Who is troubling us, not wanting to cooperate with us. Every part of our life, we would be having a Hiranyakashipu. So we don't allow ourselves to become fearful of such Hiranyakashipus. There is something else that we have to be genuinely fearful about, and that is our Krishna consciousness. So that's the goal of life, to be Krishna conscious till the end. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.